Thanks for tuning in to the Drive On podcast, where we're focused on giving hope and strength to the entire military community. Whether you're a veteran, active duty, guard, reserve, or a family member, this podcast will share inspirational stories and resources that are useful to you. I'm your host, Scott DeLucio, and now let's get on with the show. Hey everybody, welcome back to Drive On. I'm your host, Scott DeLucio, and today my guest is Sean Knudsen. Sean is an Army veteran who has transitioned into consulting with veterans, entrepreneurs, and businesses, and we're going to chat with him a little bit about the types of stuff that he does in just a minute. But first, I want to welcome you to the show, Sean. Really glad to have you here.
Hey, thank you very much. I really appreciate doing this. It's a great opportunity to get this message out. And thank you for what you're doing. You know, I really support anyone who's helping veterans. It's sometimes they're a tough nut to crack. We get so, so hardened by the military. Sometimes it's hard to be open to new ideas. So I think it's really great what you're doing. I appreciate that.
Yeah, we're a bunch of hard-headed individuals, aren't we?
Yeah, some of the toughest crowds to work with are veterans.
Yeah, right. And trying to get them to, you know, kind of change their ways or change their way of thinking sometimes can be really difficult. And a lot Absolutely. Of times we need to get out of our own way. We're our own, you know, biggest enemy sometimes when we are standing in our own way with, you know, whatever it is that we might have going on. Sometimes we just need to, shut up and listen to some advice. Yeah. So hopefully that's what we're going to do today.
Absolutely.
Let's take it back just a little bit and tell us a little bit about your background in the Army. What was your role? Where were you stationed?
Okay.
Types of things that you did there.
I was in the Army National Guard. So I joined the National Guard after 9/11. And spent most of my time as what we call an M-Day soldier. And then we deployed to Iraq. And then when I came back, I went to work for a federal SWAT team. And so it was a civilian SWAT team under the Army. And so my civilian job was working for the Army. Then I was in the National Guard as well. And then I did go on orders. I was an instructor for the, I guess they called it WLC back then, Warrior Leader Course, for those of you in the Army. And I did that for a couple of years. And I was a 13 Bravo for about three quarters of my career. And then I transitioned to, I got the 13 Fox MOS. Well, I got the 13 Fox MOS quite a while ago. But I transitioned into a 13 Fox position for the last few years and then I'm currently retiring out of the Guard. So that's why I have the beard and I went to drill 2 months ago and I had to paste my hair to my head so nobody noticed that I was growing it out. Being in the Guard was a unique experience because not only did we go on federal deployments, we were a part of things like Hurricane Katrina. So I was there for a month in New Orleans. And so we do a lot of these homeland security. I've been on a presidential security detail, fires, floods. The riots, like all kinds of homeland security missions, as well as the federal missions.
Yeah.
So it's been an interesting career. It's been pretty fun and I've learned a lot and I've had a great time.
Yeah. You know, the National Guard, you know, a lot of times I was in the National Guard as well. A lot of times National Guard gets a bad rap amongst the military, right? Not in a bad way, right? But we all like to tease each other, right? And it's a lot of fun,
I thought that until, serving with active duty units, like in Iraq, they don't know anything we don't know. It's like, they just do it all the time. And it was interesting as an artillery unit, talking to other like active duty artillery units, we actually fired as much as they did, like live fire. They didn't fire any more than we did. When they were hanging out, cleaning the guns, we went and did our jobs.
So they were taking care of the gear for you.
Well, I mean, we have our own gear, but it's just interesting to see the different dynamic of it. And, you know, the great thing about the Guard is that we bring a lot of, so like I was on a federal SWAT team. Mm-hmm. So like when I go on these missions, like, hey, look, I also, like, I was a, you know, sniper, entry team leader, ended up with SWAT commander on a federal SWAT team. So that's a lot of skills that I bring to, you know, if I deploy to some Homeland Security mission or whatever. And there's we got a lot of cops, a lot of, you know, anything. There's just a lot of variety that comes to a mission when the National Guard goes.
Yeah, absolutely. And that was one of the points I was going to make, is that the National Guard and in the reserves, they have just such a diverse array of backgrounds versus active duty, where a lot of times guys are, and ladies are, they're joining, you know, right out of high school, and they go and they learn whatever their MOS is, they learn their job. And that's kind of the extent of the career training that they've had. Not knocking that at all, because they do a great job, right? But I guess to that point, what I'm trying to say is that the National Guard, you have your military career training, you know, for whatever your MOS happens to be, but then you also have your civilian job. So you might have, like you in your case, a SWAT team, you know, law enforcement, you might have mechanics, you might have doctors, you might have, you know, all sorts of different backgrounds in the same unit. And think about when you're deployed, whether it's, you know, stateside for, you know, a Homeland Security type thing, you know, natural disaster, riots, that type of thing, or deployed overseas, think how useful that unique set of skill sets. I don't think any two National Guard units are going to have the same set of skill sets, just because there's so many different jobs out there, right? Yeah. So, you know, you get so much variety, and that comes in handy real quick when things start going south. Like, hey, well, we got this mechanic who can now take a look at these trucks and figure out what's going on with them, you know, so we don't have to wait for the Army mechanics to show up and fix them or whatever, you know what I mean? So like that kind of thing is awesome. Yeah.
Yep. Absolutely. A big thing with us was a lot of construction people.
Oh,
so like when we were in Iraq, we could get materials, like we could put in an order for some plywood, 2x4s, saws, and all of a sudden we're building all kinds of stuff. And that people, other units probably didn't have the skills to do, because we had contractors in our, you know, hey, you want us to build a house? Let's build a house.
Yeah.
You know, it's pretty funny. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And actually, that's a good point. We had someone like that too. We had an area that we frequently were at. It was right on the Pakistan border in Afghanistan. And we were out there, you know, exposed to the elements, the sun, the rain, and, you know, all this kind of stuff. And this guy went out, he got a bunch of like plywood and stuff. And he went out one day and he just built a shelter over this thing and made it so we didn't have to be in the direct sunlight or in the rain or whatever. Yep. You know, and so it just made it that much easier.
Absolutely.
You know, not to say an active duty person couldn't figure that out, but, you know, it's just in their skill set. So it was just, you know, top of mind. Hey, I could do this. This is easy. You know?
Yeah, we had, you know, they always want to make fun of the guard too. So in Iraq, when we would work, you know, we work side by side with the active duty units, and they at first they were making fun of us. And as we got to know them and we kind of told them, mentioned like the benefits available to that guard, and someone would get pissed. My recruiter never told me about this stuff.
That's because you went to an active duty recruiter, not a guard recruiter, right?
Yeah, it was really fun, though.
So, okay. So you're saying that you're getting ready to retire from the National Guard, right? Or already have.
I'm not officially retired, but I'm not going to drill anymore.
Got it.
So I'll be officially retired next month.
Got it. Okay. So this transition, is this something that you saw coming and kind of had time to plan for? Or is it, you know, is this kind of like, oh crap, now what am I going to do with the rest of my life? You know, what are you looking for with this transition?
So the reason it happened, I always told, everyone always asked when I was going to retire, because I've got 23 years in, and I just said, you know, as long as I'm having fun, I'll keep doing it. My last unit, I am currently with the 4th Infantry Division. They have a small unit here in Utah, a bunch of jobs that they just said, we don't need these jobs full time. Mm-hmm. But when we deploy, we want to keep these assets. So they farmed them out to the National Guard. The Utah picked them up. And so that's, I'm a 13 Fox in that unit. So we actually just deployed with, so the 4th ID just deployed to Poland this last year.
Okay.
And so just when they go, we go with them. We go over and we train with them over there. And so it's been fun. Like it's, I was the platoon sergeant over, it was the combat platoon within our National Guard unit here in Utah. So we had 11 Bravos, 13 Foxes, 12 Charlies. And so we would just, basically we were autonomous. We would come up with our own drills. And so we would get, you know, the shoot houses, the helicopters, like pretty much whatever we wanted. Our commander, who is a colonel, he's a former infantry, and or not for, I guess he's currently infantry, but he came up 11 Bravo. And so we would bring all these ideas to him and he was like, love it. Let's do it. You know, go kick ass. Like, and so we would bring along some of the, you know, the intel analysts and different things to kind of teach them. And it was just fun. We just came up with, you know, it's so fun to do it because you want to, not because you have to. Like, yeah. You know, so we do these eight mile rucks and things like that. And it's a lot more fun when you're coming up with the idea rather than, hey, you got an eight mile ruck next week. Like, oh, that sucks. But right. It's been fun. You know, it's all these guys are, they're young, they're motivated and excited. And so I always said, you know, as long as I'm having fun, I'm going to stay in. What really happened is kind of getting into this consulting and coaching arena. I am going to seminars and retreats all the time. And the scheduling just became too much. Mm-hmm. Like the reason I'm not going to drill is because I have a business retreat that I'm going to that conflicts with drill. Same thing last month. And I was just like, this is just happening more and more. And it's just not making sense to stay in the Guard anymore. So it's time to move out. So that's the reason I did. And obviously being in the Guard, it's not a huge transition because basically I'm just going to stop going. But in 2014, I left active duty and just went to a drill status. So that was the biggest transition for me, was that I had started a business that I was doing on the side, and my side business was making as much as my full-time business. So I thought, well, it doesn't make sense to keep. So that's when I was a WC instructor. I was like, it doesn't make sense because they wanted me to keep doing it. They wanted to renew my orders for the next year. And I was like, I don't know. It just doesn't make sense where I'm making as much money on the side business. So the first month that I left active duty, I doubled my income. So then I was like, yeah, this definitely was the right
that makes
choice.
Sense. Right.
But you know, some of the things that I see with, it has been a struggle. And you know, honestly, the biggest struggle was when I got home from Iraq. When I got home from Iraq, going to civilian, that was the biggest struggle. And, you know, when I see things military, we become like very institutionalized in our thinking. We become so programmed to do what they tell us to do and to stay within these lines or left and right limits that sometimes I think it's hard to get out into the civilian world. And all of a sudden you have this kind of freedom of thought, freedom of action. Like, what do I do? Like you. And so I think that that's one of the things that for me personally, that I've struggled with going from military to civilian, and especially going into starting a business, because I think a lot of times, you know, you look back and there's so many fun times in the military, and some of the funnest times were the worst times. Like yeah. You look at the time, it was just miserable. And you look back at it, you run into your buddies and you're like, do you remember that night? We didn't have any sleep and we were freezing. We were sitting in the back of that 5-ton and we couldn't find the, you know, the AO, and we were driving around for hours and we had no comma with anybody. And it wasn't that funny. And you're like, at the time it was miserable. And, but you know, we have buddies and friends or battle buddies that we're doing things with. And then when we leave the military, some of the things that I see we lose is that connection. Yeah. We just don't have the connection that we had in the military. And then we lose that purpose, because in the military, obviously we have our five order the op order. We have the commander's intent. We have everything laid out for us. That is our purpose. We live or die by that commander's intent. And then we get out into the civilian world. We don't have our buddies. And you wake up and go, what am I doing? Like, I mean, I guess I'm going to go to Home Depot and go work today. But what, you know, what's my purpose? What's my mission? What's my vision? And I think that that's one of the things that we tend to miss a lot in the military, not to mention some of the mental health issues that we have also, you know, from Iraq, from some of this institutionalized thinking, I think can have some negative effects on our mental health. Mm-hmm. And so kind of letting go of a lot of those things are some of the challenges that I have personally faced and that I have, that I really strive to help other people with. Oh, that was kind of a roundabout answer to your question.
No, it's a good answer, though, I think, because there are a lot of people who are getting either transitioning out of the military altogether. I know in a National Guard transition, it's a lot easier because you tend to have that civilian job already lined up. And so it's like, okay, you just stop going to drill and your weekend frees up. Like, that's the transition is you get one more weekend a month that you don't have to go, you know, you could do whatever you want. You could drink beer. You can, you know, go do whatever you want. You know, so that's, you know, on the National Guard side, there is that transition, but you did mention a good point there is with, you know, coming back from a deployment, there is a transition there too, because you are, you know, on an active status while you are deployed. And you're out doing stuff that, you know, most people aren't willing or able to do themselves. And you see some stuff that could be, you know, pretty hairy. And when you get back now you gotta kind of deal with that and deal with civilian life as well. And it's like, there's a lot going on there. So,
absolutely. So, you know, it's hard to, there's, you know, despite what you've, you know, politically your feelings on, you know, Iraq, Afghanistan, whatever you did over there, it was a meaningful thing because even, you know, you're looking out for your buddies, following these orders, you're doing, what you're doing has value. And if you screw it up, big things, big consequences can happen. And so another aspect I think is getting into the civilian world and trying to find how do I have that same kind of meaning and impact on my life and the lives of people around me. And you mentioned the National Guard, you know, you just quit going to drill. And obviously that's the fun part. I think the hard part with drill though, even with the National Guard, is that that's such a part of your identity.
It does become,
like now I'm growing the beard, I'm growing the long hair. Like, who am I without being a soldier? And so that's to me, the hardest part is kind of letting go of that identity, I guess, that connection that I am a soldier. Like I just always think of myself as a soldier. And so there is a little bit of some sadness, some emotions with letting go of that. You know, you're not seeing your buddies every weekend and, you know, you're taking off the uniform for the last time. When I walked out of the building, my last time in uniform, I saw a major and I saluted him, and it was one of my old platoon leaders from like 12 years ago. And so I saluted him and I said, congratulations, sir. I said, that's my last salute. And he's like, oh, really? He says, yeah, I'm retiring next month. This is last time in uniform. He's like, well, I'm glad I got to return your salute. And so it's kind of cool that it was him.
Yeah.
And then I heard him. Ran to my car so I didn't run into any other officers. But yeah, that was kind of cool. But it's, you know, it's something that it kind of hit me when I did that salute that's my last time saluting.
Yeah. Yeah. And it does hit you. You know, it's almost like a light switch. Like all of a sudden, you know, you've been this soldier for so long, and then you flip that switch and then boom, now you're not, you take that uniform off. And you know, there's some pride, you know, when you wear that uniform and knowing that you're not going to be putting it back on again, you know, in any official context, it kind of is, you know, a hard thing to to go through, you know, even if it is, you know, National Guard and it's a, you know, 1 week in a month kind of thing, it's not your full-time thing. It's still a part of you. And so that is kind of tricky, I think, for a lot of people as they're transitioning out, and they may not even realize it, you know, until they get to that point. And then they're like, holy crap, I wasn't expecting this, you know? So let's talk about the consulting work, the stuff that you do now, and, you know, talk about, you know, kind of what it is that you do, and, you know, where did you kind of come up with the idea for what it is that you do? And, you know, did the military have any influence on it or anything along those lines, and kind of just fill us in on that.
Yeah. So I started my first business at 24 years old. It was a construction business, did really well. Did that up until 2007 when I deployed to Iraq. And when I came back, if you remember, in fact, in 2007, I was doing a subdivision and had just dug the hole for the first house. And while I was on a track hoe, I got a call from my unit, hey, you're being deployed to Iraq. And so I turned the tractor off and I sat there and thought, well, shit, what do I do now?
Yeah. Right.
So I talked to the bank, and the bank's like, hey, we want to help you. We want to support you. You're a soldier. And so they said, we'll just keep everything. You can pay this minimum payment. When you get back, we'll just pick it up right where you left off and build the houses and do the subdivision. Well, fortunately, all kinds of people, because I had all the permits, I had everything done. Like, it was ready to go. And so a lot of people were contacting me because this was still within the bubble and they wanted to buy the development. And so I ended up selling it while I was in Iraq. And the guy that bought it built the first home, and then the bubble crashed and he ended up moving into that house, and the rest of the homes didn't get built for like another 10 years.
Oh man.
And it was like, it was perfect. So, but when I came home, and I got into construction again, I just picked up my business like I did. And boy, it was tough. It was tough. There was not much work and the pay was really little. So I was like, well, maybe with my military experience, I can go do something else. So I found this opportunity to get on this federal SWAT team. So I did that. And then I did that for 8 years. And then then that job ended. And because it was only, we were getting rid of chemical weapons. And so they had a security force with the SWAT team. And once the chemical weapons were gone, the job was gone. So then that's when I went active duty with the Guard to be an instructor for WLC. I think they call it BLC now, Basic Leader Course. And while there, I got into dog training. So when I got back from Iraq, I was struggling like everybody does, some anger issues, some PTSD. And I got a puppy. And I started training the puppy, and I was actually getting frustrated with the puppy. I'm like, this stupid dog is like crapping everywhere and peeing and won't stop barking. So I worked with a professional trainer, and working with that dog really helped me relax. Like, it helped me to calm down, to deal with civilians better, because I realized if the puppy makes a mistake, it's my fault. It's not the puppy's fault. I was expecting too much. I wasn't clear, you know, whatever it was my fault. I was just, you know, trying to do too much too quickly. And that helped me to be more patient with my kids and with civilians. So I got more and more into training, ended up winning a national championship, and then started a dog training business. And the dog training business did really well. I started it with a partner. We were, you know, we got up to where we were making about $2 million a year.
Oh, wow.
And with about $400,000 overhead. So it was a pretty lucrative business. And then, money creates problems, and, you know, you can become a victim of your own success. And I've had this happen I've started quite a few businesses, and I've had it happen where you kind of become a victim of your own success. We ended up parting ways. And I've always done really good at starting businesses. And then they get to a point, I never knew how to get, because I get to the point where I told people it's like golden handcuffs. Like, the business was doing so well that I was making a lot of money, but I always felt trapped. Like, I had to be there constantly, putting out fires, dealing with employees, dealing with clients. And I never knew how to get to that next step where I find someone else to deal with that stuff. Cause I never was able to, I just didn't find people that I could trust. And so I would actually sell businesses, let go of businesses, start over with different businesses because I just didn't like that feeling of being trapped and stuck with those golden handcuffs. And so then I had the idea, and through my military career, I was always working with young soldiers, and in the Guard, a lot of them wanted to start businesses. So I would basically coach people for free because I'd be like, well, I've started multiple businesses. Let me help you. So I helped a lot of young businesses or young soldiers start businesses. And I loved it. I absolutely loved coaching them, helping them. And so then I thought, you know what? I love starting businesses. Why don't I help people start businesses? Because that's what I'm good at. I love it. So I'm working right now with he's a Marine, former Marine, that he's an archer, and he's like one of the top archers in the nation, but just didn't know how to turn it into a business. He's coached a bunch of celebrities on shooting and just really great exposure, but just didn't know how to turn it into a business. So he's been working with me, and it's been fantastic to see how, or help him to see how to take what he's already doing and then just find that purpose, that direction, find out what skills, you know, he's lacking. Because when I started looking into getting coaching myself, one of the biggest things was I didn't know what I didn't know.
Right.
So I'd have a coach, you know, telling me something like, oh my goodness, I never thought about that. Yeah, I've always struggled with that. I never thought about that. Back when I was starting businesses, there was no internet. You could get a book, and other people in your industry didn't want to give you their secrets. So it was literally everybody was trial and error, and you just try not to screw it up. And if you go to college, which I went to college for construction management, and your professors, and the same thing in the business industry, are generally people who have not done the business. So you have a business professor that's never started, owned, or run a business, but they're teaching you how to do it. So that's what you had back in the day. Obviously, now we have a lot more information. We have the internet. And, you know, in my opinion, everybody should be a coach. When you do something well, you should coach somebody else. That's how society has run for, you know, millions of years, depending on your belief on how long we've been here. Someone would become a good hunter and would take the young boys out and teach them how to hunt. He was a coach. That's what everybody should become, a coach, if you do something well. Right. And, you know, then, you know, 200 years ago, you would go be an apprentice. Hey, this guy's a great shoemaker. I want to do that. So you go be an apprentice and he coaches you. So that's all we're doing today, is that once you do something well, you should, especially as you have the experience and you get up in age, I think it's a great thing for everybody to do, is to coach someone else to get the results that you've gotten. So that's what I decided I wanted to do. And I absolutely love it. And then I don't have to worry about, getting stuck in this business where I'm getting frustrated because, like, I'm just here all the time and I'm making great money, but I don't know how to, you know, maybe get out of that situation. And honestly, I know my place. I'm great at starting businesses. Once a person is making, and I've helped like 25 people start businesses that are making $100,000 personal income. That's what I'm great at. Mm-hmm. Beyond that, I will send you to other coaches that I've worked with, because that's not what I'm great at. I'm not great at scaling a business, you know, from, you know, let's say you're making 500 grand a year to 5 million a year. That's not my expertise. I would love to get there, and hopefully I will, but I'm great at getting to that 100,000 personal income with your business.
Sure. Sure. And it's great too. And I think your point is about being a coach and how everyone should coach other people. I think everybody has something that they're good at. And, you know, some people, maybe they haven't discovered what that something is. But once then you have discovered that thing, hey, I'm pretty good at, you know, fill in the blank, whatever it is. Why not share that with other people? I mean, you don't have these secrets that are like nobody else in the world has ever thought to start a business, right? Like in your case, right? It's
yep.
It's not like you're guarding any closely, you know, guarded secrets here. It's you're just good at it, and so you're taking all the hassle and all the headaches out of that initial, you know, maybe first couple of years of a business to get it up and running and all the stuff that goes into it. A lot of times, if you don't know, like you said, if you don't know what you don't know, it's going to be a whole lot harder to start that business, right?
Yep.
So when folks are coming to you to start their business, talk to us about what that process looks like. You know, are you helping them vet ideas? Like sometimes someone may come to you and say, "Hey, I got what they think is a great idea," and then it turns out it's like, "Yeah, well, maybe that's not such a great idea." Like they're just haven't thought it through. Do you work with them on that?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. With all of that, I also help, even if someone has an existing business, because a lot of times the things I didn't realize that I didn't really need to quit, I could have like pivoted. So mm-hmm. sometimes you can make some changes in your business and find and have it be the much more fulfilling than maybe what you're experiencing now. So I do help with that as well. And I help businesses with leadership, you know, from my military and SWAT and business experience. But one of my big things is making sure that you're in alignment, that the job or the career or the business that you want to start is in alignment with your purpose, your values, and your lifestyle. Like, do you want to have a brick and mortar location? That some people do. Some people want a warehouse that I can go and I'm kind of the king of my castle. I walk in and I know everybody's name and they know me and, you know, and I slap high fives with everybody. Some people want to have a business where like this, it's you're talking through Zoom and you can do it from anywhere in the world and you're traveling around. And so there's all kinds of different ways to do different things. So even the same business can be done in a lot of different ways. So just finding what your values are. So there's exercises that I go through to help you find your values and the purpose, like what gives you fulfillment? Like, is it helping people now? Are you looking for something that's, you want to have something that's going to carry on for generations? You want something that you can pass down to your kids? Like, what is it that's the most important to you? And then your lifestyle, like, mm-hmm. if those things are not in alignment, you will not be happy. I've been there. I've been in businesses where I was making a lot of money, but it wasn't in alignment with my values and my lifestyle. And I was not happy. And that's, you know, I've been in situations where I self-sabotage. Like I don't want this to, you know, to do well. So I took a couple years off pretty much. I kept my business, but I had my business like scaled down, my dog business, to where I was making 20 grand a month. And that's all I wanted. And with that, I could work 4 hours a day and make 20 grand a month. And when I had all the business I needed for that, if somebody called, I would hope it was a telemarketer because I didn't want to take any more business on. But I was spending $10,000 a month on, at that time, on coaching, on seminars and retreats. And so I did not want to make any more, I would be fine with money. I didn't want to do any more work because I wanted to focus on all the things that I wanted to learn. And so at that time, that was the lifestyle that I wanted. But if I had gotten swamped and made three times that money, I would have gotten burnt out. I would have been tired of it. I would have started to self-sabotage. So I knew for this time, I just need to keep this threshold. Mm-hmm. Because I don't want to, I want to focus on what's important to me. And at that time it was studying, learning, writing, you know, working on a lot of these things. So helping an individual find those things out for themselves, that can save you years and thousands, possibly millions of dollars. Yeah. If you can, because it's something that you love now can become a monster later on.
That's right.
Like I found that out, like I got into construction because I loved to build. I thought it was fun. I loved to build houses. And then I got to the point where I'm 15 20 employees and I'm building three different houses at one time and I'm not building. I'm running from job to job all day long, putting out fires.
That's
like,
right.
Hey, this crew screwed up this window. And I'm like going there dealing with that. And hey, this, you know, the other foreman's like, hey, the owner's wants to change this or that. And I hated it. I was making good money, but I hated it. I hated dealing with all the employees. I hated dealing with the clients. Like I just, you know, it was frustrating.
Yeah. And you're absolutely right. That's something that you kind of have to do a little soul searching to see what is your tolerance for that type of stuff, because you might be, in your case, you might be really good at building houses or building things in general, or you might be a really good baker and you want to open up a bakery, or you might be a really good, I don't know, whatever else. You might be really good at some other thing. But then when you start that business, you find that you're now managing the people who do the thing that you're really great at and the thing that you really love to do. You're managing those people and you get to watch them watch them do it. And yeah, of course there's going to be occasions where you go in and you do that work too, but it's not, you're going to be doing more of the managing of that type of work than the actual work. If the business starts growing and you start adding employees and all that kind of stuff, right? You keep it small and it's just you and you're the guy who's doing the stuff. You know, maybe a little bit harder to do when you're building houses to, you know, do that solo. But, you know, for other things, maybe there is just a, you know, 1-2 person small operation where you can do that. You know, fine, you'll be doing the stuff that you enjoy. But it's not going to take away the fact that there's other stuff that businesses need to do. They need to, you know, manage their books. They have to, you know, do their taxes. There's, you know, messes that need to get cleaned up, and they got to, you know, take the time to do all that kind of stuff. And it's not necessarily the work that you want to be doing. And so, you know, instead of hiring an accountant and getting a, you know, a janitor or, you know, all of those kind of things to help support you in your business, you're now wearing all those hats and you're trying to keep all those plates spinning. And it could get to the point where you're burnt out. I had a business a couple of years ago that I ended up selling, and it got to the point where I was just burnt out of all the other stuff that kind of went along with running the business. And to the point where I just felt like I didn't care about it anymore. Like I love doing it, the work. But it was all that extra stuff that I was just like, ugh, this sucks. And I don't want to do this. You know? And so now I know this about myself, and now I know what not to do in the future. You know, what type of business do I not want to, you know, get into? Yep.
Absolutely.
You know, it's good to have somebody there to help you think through these things that you may not see coming down the road if you haven't done a business before yourself, or even if you have, you may not see what's over that next hill. So having a coach to walk you through that kind of stuff, I think is important because maybe they can help, you know, still get you into that business, but think about ways that you can mitigate some of the stuff that you don't want to do, and figure out how can we get you to do this type of work without having to do that kind of stuff that you don't want to do. And there's always going to be stuff that you don't want to do, but kind of minimizing it, right? And making it so it's not the you know, bulk of your day every day for, you know, the rest of time. You want to make it so that, yeah, when those things pop up, okay, I'll deal with those when they come up, you know, once a month or, you know, twice a month or something like that, but it's not an everyday occurrence kind of thing. And that I think is, you know, important, you know, and it could be something as simple as, okay, well, hire somebody to do that type of stuff for you. You know, if the business can afford to hire that type of person, you know, whatever the the work happens to be, then that's a solution. But then it gets into, like you were saying before, now you have people that you have to manage. If you're not into that, then maybe you need to hire a manager that manages those people. I don't know. There's so many different permutations of what could happen here. It's important to kind of know your strengths, know your weaknesses, know your wants and desires and all that kind of stuff. And starting a business, I've been there. You get that rush of adrenaline when you get this idea. It's like, I'm going to do this. I'm going to start this business, and I'm going to be, I'm going to be on top of the industry, whatever industry it is. And I'm going to do all these great things.
Yeah.
Then reality smacks you in the face and like, no, the hell you're not.
Yeah. And you know, if you can get some guidance, and you know, for me, it's that discovering process, like getting very clear about exactly what you want. And I even, when I work with clients, to the point that let's talk about, you know, so we discover your ideal lifestyle. Like, do you want to travel the world? Do you want to, like, what kind of home do you want to live in? What kind of cars do you want to drive? And then we do an exercise where we figure out how much that's going to cost. Mm. And then, okay, what's the taxes going to be on that? And then I have a process where I go through and we do 10% to, you know, to donations, 10% to long-term savings, short-term savings. 10% goes to coaching and education, basically education and wellness. And so we figure out all of this and say, okay, well, this is what we need to make. And so then we kind of design a business, a lifestyle, and we do some like manifesting in there, some setting these as goals and things that we're going to work on to achieve that, whatever it is that that person decided that's absolutely what they want. So getting clear on that lifestyle, that what's that lifestyle going to cost, and then how can we build a business around that?
Yeah.
And that's kind of where I go. And then from there, we go down to we get to the nuts and bolts, like, you know, coming up with the name of your business, getting that same name across all social media platforms, make sure the domain is available. Like I have a 25-step process that just goes through all the legal issues, you know, getting it registered with the state, you know, your LLC, all these different things. And then once that's done, then we work on getting data. So one of the big things for me as a coach is I need data. Like if the worst thing that happens is if I work with somebody that week and then they didn't do anything the next week, because I have no data. I would rather have them screw something up and say, hey, I tried to do this and it didn't work. And well, perfect. Let's look at the data. You know, what did you receive from this? And then we have something to work on. Because if you don't have that, then you have nothing. And for me, one of the most important things a coach can do is help someone to be empowered. And this is the same thing in the military, same thing in the civilian world as a leader. We need to empower those people that are underneath us and encourage them to come up with new and inspired ideas. So I've worked with coaches that they felt threatened if I came up with something on my own and then did it, because the idea didn't come from them and they have to justify what I'm paying them. So some of those coaches, I've worked with a couple that were like that. And, you know, we parted ways because that's not what I'm looking for. So for me as a coach, I really encourage them to, you know, to take bold action and to come up with, to have these kind of great inspired ideas and then act on them boldly. And that's what I encourage them to do every week. And then we just talk about, okay, how did it go? And if it didn't work, that's fine. Data, we just need data. We don't need everything to be successful. We need data so that we can then grow and use that to figure out what we're going to do this week.
Yeah. And that data that you're talking about is super important. A lot of times people look at things not going right as a failure, like, I screwed this thing up. It's never going to work, you know, whatever. But that data will help you to identify the things that don't work, so you don't do those again. Don't waste any more time or money or effort on those things that don't work, and try something else and see if that that thing will work. I think it was Thomas Edison, I think, who was quoted as saying, I haven't failed. I just found 10,000 ways that don't work, you know?
Yeah, that's right.
So it's not a failure. It's just like, hey, I tried this thing. It doesn't work. Okay. Don't do that again.
Yeah.
Easy. You know?
And along those lines, it's tough too, because it is a balancing act, because you do get people that say, if you're digging for water, you don't dig, you know, down a foot, oh, nothing. And then, so you dig 1,000 holes at a foot, you know, sometimes you got to like give some things a chance. And that's where kind of an experienced coach can help. Like, yeah, hey, I think you're onto something here, but I think, you know, rather than dig 1,000 holes, pick one thing and let's go deep with it and see what we see if we don't hit the water. And so it's kind of that balancing act of, you know, like, is it time to give up on this, or did I not give it a chance? And so kind of getting some feedback. The other thing about coaching that's great is a lot of times we already know so many things that we don't do. For me personally, like, there's things that I know I could do better right now today in my life that I'm not doing, but I have coaches that I'm accountable to. And so I know that they're going to ask me about, you know, the things that we talked about, how did you do? And so sometimes that's what motivates me, is like, I don't want to let my coach down, you know, and I got coaches that I pay $1,000 an hour to, and I don't want to let them down. And so right. I work on the things that I, so there's that accountability aspect of it too, that, you know, besides getting some direction, guidance, helping you discover things about yourself, that there is also that each week there's that accountability. And I find that to be super helpful for me personally. And I think also for my clients.
Yeah. And I think you mentioned how sometimes some coaches might, maybe get jealous or feel threatened by some brilliant idea that you might have, or whatever the case might be. I think in those cases, those people, I wouldn't label them as a coach. Like, when I think of a coach, I think of like a baseball team. And when that team, a player on that team hits a home run, the coach is cheering with the rest of the team, right? They're excited. They're enthusiastic. They're not feeling threatened because their player hit a home run. They're feeling like wonderful because their player hit a home run, not threatened. Right. So, maybe it's, another way to look at it is that those people are maybe teachers, but also competitors in a way, they might feel threatened. You don't feel threatened if you're not competing in some way or another. So those are maybe the types of people you want to avoid. I think that's maybe a lesson
absolutely
there, right? You know,
It definitely comes out of their insecurity.
For sure. Yeah. Insecurity. And for whatever purpose that they're, or whatever reason that they're insecure, really doesn't matter. That right there should tell you, hey, this person is not going to get me to be as good as I can be. They're going to be holding me back in one way or another. Maybe they're giving me advice that's not going to get me to where I need to be. They're not the type of person that you want to be around. So having someone in your corner, with the experiences that you've had and the folks that you've worked with, I think is important to help kind of promote the good ideas and get people to realize their full potential when they are coming to you for the type of advice that you're giving them, right?
Yep, absolutely.
So as you've gone through this with a number of different businesses, I'm sure there's some folks, maybe they're in the military, maybe they're not, who are looking to start a business, or maybe they have a business and they're looking to grow it and get to that next level, get over that next hump that they might be dealing with. Two questions. One, what advice do you have for those folks who are maybe they're standing in their own way and they don't know how to get out of their own way? And then how do they get in touch with you to find out more about the type of work that you do?
So they can contact me through my They can find me on social media, Sean Knutson on Facebook, or Warrior Mindset Strategies on Instagram. I think you got the link somewhere. But,
yes. Yeah. And I'll put those links in the show notes as well for folks too. So
perfect. And you know, anybody that comes to me, what I do is I actually do a free session with them. And I actually, the free session is one of my favorites because it's a discovery session where we just work on getting very clear in that 45 minutes, what it is that they really want and what things are holding them back.
Okay.
And it's very, for people, everyone that I've done it with, it's very, like a very inspirational experience. Even people that, and you know, you have to find the right coach for you. And I do not get offended at all if somebody doesn't want to work with me, because I only want to work with the people that are feel energetically drawn to me. Just like, you know, there's coaches that I've had that weren't great for me and I didn't work with, and I discontinued working with them. So, but as far as the taking the first step is, you know, it's just, we sometimes get in our heads and we think too much. Sometimes we just have to trust our body, trust our heart, and just take that step. Whether the step is to call me, call somebody, call, like maybe there's somebody in your life that you like what they're doing and you've always wanted to do that. Maybe the next step for you is to actually call that person and say, hey, I love what you do. I'm interested. Could I find out more about it? And maybe they can direct you to the person if they can't help you themselves. But, you know, we sometimes think that we have to know all the answers and that we like, for instance, this year, so I also turned 50, I've gotten into painting and I've always loved painting. I never did it. I've always loved looking at painting and seeing people paint, but I always thought painters and artists were like these naturally, they were just born that way. And there are some people that just, you put a pen in their hand and these little kids start drawing. But the majority of the people, they go to somebody and learn. So I've been learning how to paint from other people. And I'm now surprising myself with, oh my goodness, that looks really cool. So I've given paintings to people. It's the same thing in business. Like you get this idea that, oh, hey, I want to do this, but I don't know how. But we almost have this feeling like I should know how. If this was my calling in life, I would automatically know how to do it. And that is absolutely not the case. Like you need to go talk to somebody. You know, if it's not me, go talk to somebody and find out how to do the thing that you want to do. LeBron James has like 5 to 10 different coaches. And not one of those coaches could beat him in basketball. But all of them help him be the best basketball player he can be. You know, he's got like a free throw coach, a strength coach, conditioning coach, mindset coach, like all these different kind of coaches. Presidents have coaches. All of the top leaders in the world, all of the, you know, the biggest businessmen, they all have coaches that help them with different things. So there's things that people are good at, and those people can help you with what it is you want to do. So finding those people, whether it's painting or mixed martial arts or starting a business, whatever it is, right now, take that step to reach out to someone who's doing what you want to do and just have a conversation with them.
Yeah. And there's a saying, and I don't know who said it or where it came from. I just remember hearing it. So I'm going to regurgitate it here, but if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. And so that mindset is like, okay, yeah, you can go real fast, but you're probably not going to get very far with that by going alone. You want to take this business to that next level. You want to bring it to a point where it can start growing. You're going to have to start trusting some other people and bring some other people on. Maybe that's bring on some coaches. Maybe it's hiring your first employee. Maybe it's, whatever it is, it's bringing those people in and learning how to trust that those people are going to do their jobs. And you know what? It's okay. If they're not, let them go and move on to that next one. Right. And then, eventually, just like trying, or finding 10,000 ways that didn't work, you'll find that certain employees are not going to work, or certain coaches are not going to work for you. Guess what? You've just discovered that that person doesn't work for you. Move on and let it go. And it's not that, it's not the end of the world, right? So, great advice, I think, so far with all of this. I think, you know, individuals who are looking to get some assistance with their business, definitely check out the services. And again, I'll have the links in the show notes for folks to check it out. And that way, you're not going alone. You're not trying to just wing it and figure it out with all these unknown obstacles in the way, that you're now going to have to, you know, try to scramble to get around when they eventually pop up. So definitely reach out and at least have that initial consultation, you know, get yeah. The juices flowing, get the, you know, the thoughts going, and hopefully, you know, points you in the right direction. Before we wrap this episode up, I always love doing a segment that I call Is It Service Connected? And it always gets a laugh whenever I have a veteran on the show. So I always try to save the segment for the veteran guests, where we get to watch a video of service members doing something stupid, or, you know, falling down, getting hurt, kind of America's Funniest Home Video style. It's not, nothing too crazy. We're not looking like, you know, someone's, you know, blowing themselves up with a, you know, grenade that they dropped at their feet or something like that. It's just, you know, usually something we can laugh about. It's something funny.
Yeah.
So, so I'm going to pull this video up here so you can check it out as well. And then we can laugh together at what's about to happen here. So, for the audio, listeners who can't see what's going on right now, it's kind of a little bit blurry right now, but it looks like we're inside of a tent. You know, military tent, looks like they got their clothes like kind of hanging up on a wire, you know, drying or whatever, maybe some racks, and looks like a guy's like kind of falling into the side here. I'm going to stop talking about it though. I'm going to hit play and we'll see what happens.
When this storm hit this army camp, so everyone like inside quickly realized the entire tent blowing this was tent. About to fly
Oh my gosh.
So everyone put in their efforts holding down
the tent. It looks
like
an entire platoon
possible.
Almost is grabbing the sides of this tent and trying to hold it down to keep it from blowing away.
Eventually the storm passed and they actually prevented the
that
tent from falling away.
That has to be an awful experience. Could you imagine?
So the best one was the guy, I don't know if you saw, he's laying in his cot.
Yeah.
Didn't even get up. He's grabbing it.
He's just grabbing the cot. Yeah, he's laying, get out of his cot. Laying down, grabbing. And he's, yeah. I guess he's just hoping his body weight is going to be enough to hold the thing down. But it seems like, there's a lot of other people putting a lot more effort into that to pull it down. And they were like trying to like step on the posts and everything to get them down onto the ground. But that guy wasn't really putting a lot of effort in. I don't see any service connection, as far as the injuries there.
Maybe they quit filming after that, and maybe they lost the tent, and that's where the service related injuries.
You know, if that tent took off and anyone was still hanging on, we're talking about some definite injuries there.
Those metal tents, I mean, they're not light.
No, they're not.
We did a field FTX in the wintertime, so it was about 2 feet of snow. It was freezing cold. And we went back after doing some convoy operations, delivering some ammo and different things that night, went back to our tents and the wind had blown them away.
Oh, wow.
And where they were at was covered with snow.
Yeah.
We literally just sat there staring at these things in the, we had to get up, but like we had to be, ready to go at like 06. And this was like probably around 2300. And so we had
not a lot of time.
Fortunately, we had another tent as we had to get out in this blizzard, put up the other tent, and we ended up tying it to the vehicles to try to save this one. But it was a miserable night.
Yeah. You know, I was infantry, so we rarely saw tents. It was not often that we had a tent. I think, you know, outside of, you know, our pre-deployment training when we were going through some of that stuff where there were just tents already set up. The only time I think I ever had a tent to sleep in overnight when we were out in the field was at the Warrior Leader course. We were doing, I think we were doing like a land nav or something like that. And we were out, you know, in the woods and, and there was a tent. I was like, what the hell is this thing? Like that's where I'm supposed to sleep, on the grass right there. But I mean, even when it was the winter time, like you're talking with all the snow and everything, we'd sleep in the middle of the snow and we'd figure it out. One time I actually, we set up, it had snowed, but we were on kind of like a slight hill. Like it was just like a slight decline. And set up everything. I ended up waking up down the hill because everything had frozen over and my sleeping bag slid down the hill. And I woke up, I was in the middle of this thorn bush and I'm trying to get out of this thing. And I'm like getting prickers all over me. It's cold and I'm angry and I'm all my shit's at the top of the hill. I'm like, I'm just so angry. Yeah, if I didn't get service connection for all that, then those guys didn't get it for dealing with their stupid tent that they shouldn't have had anyways, those jerks.
Yeah, that's so funny.
Anyways, thank you so much for taking the time to join us and sharing what it is that you do and how you're continuing to help folks out with setting up their businesses and getting that up and running. So thank you.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Drive On Podcast. If you want to support the show, please check out Scott's book, Surviving Sun, on Amazon. All of the sales from that book go directly back into this podcast and work to help veterans in need. You can also follow the Drive On Podcast on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, YouTube, and wherever you listen to podcasts.